Good evening, everyone, and a very warm welcome to all of you to the school, to the LSE. I am Sandra Jovcelovic. I am a professor of psychology here in the Department of Psychological and Behavioral Science, and it is my pleasure this evening to be chairing this very, very important event. I have a few housekeeping notes that I have to do before we start the event and before I introduce our speakers and what we're going to do this evening. So just let me tell you beforehand. Even though the mics are not working, we are going to be speaking through the mics because this event is being recorded and it will become, hopefully, a podcast that will go onto the school's website. So by being here and by participating in this event, you all agree to be part of this podcast. And if you don't, please, I will have to ask you to leave now because we are committed to make this public event accessible to the public and to a wider audience. So the way we're going to work this evening is that I'm going to ask each one of our speakers to speak for a few minutes, around 5 or 6 minutes. And then this would take us into about half an hour of this evening. And we're going to open to questions from you so that you have plenty of opportunities of interacting with our speakers this evening. So, what we are going to be addressing in this event. Part of what this event is trying to do is to bring you a first-person perspective on the experience of being a refugee, of having gone through the challenging, harrowing, painful, sometimes extraordinary process of having to change one's life course, of having to leave a place and find yourself in another place with a different status, that of being a refugee. So we ask our speakers this evening to tell us as much as they could about why, how did they feel about leaving Syria? Why did they leave Syria? At what point they realized it was actually not possible to stay at home anymore, to remain in their place of origin. If when they left, they imagined things were going to be as they are now for them. And hopefully they will tell us a bit about the personal experiences and the upheavals of becoming a refugee. We are also hoping to hear some of their experiences in relation to how people here in the UK have perceived them and interacted with them. Have they experienced acts of solidarity, of discrimination, of prejudice, of indifference? And hopefully we'll also get some of their perspectives on the global system of refugee protection. So without any further ado, I want to introduce our speakers. We are going to have this evening Ala Barry, who is a Syrian refugee based in London, working at Chatham House and doing a PhD in social policy at the University of Birmingham. Bashar Faraj, who is right here, yes, who is a Syrian medical doctor living as a refugee in London, and currently undertaking a conversion course so that he can hopefully practice medicine in the UK. Sema Nassar is sitting right next to me, is a Syrian refugee, a very prominent human rights activist based in London. And finally, Mohamed Ghanam, who is a Palestinian-Syrian refugee living in France and working for Médecins Sans Frontières. So if Ala, perhaps if you could start. You have some 5-6 minutes. And I will be a firm speaker so that our audience, a firm chair, I mean, so that our audience can also participate. Please, Ala, the floor is yours. Yes.
So,
if you can speak on the mic and project your voice so that our podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. My journey is similar to other Syrians' refugee journey to anywhere, not only here in the UK. It has its own beauty and its own challenges. And when I came here to the UK, I wasn't even thinking that I will become a refugee. I came here in 2013 on a scholarship to do my master's, and I wasn't even planning to seek asylum. But I had to, after a year and a half, almost a year and a half, to seek asylum because I couldn't feel secure anymore to go back to my country, especially with a rising of violation of human rights and persecution. I had to seek asylum because I didn't feel that I can go back and continue living in this country anymore. But I'm not here today to speak why I left Syria per se, but more about the journey itself, how I struggled here in the UK to start a life from scratch, just like any other refugee. Although I was educated and I graduated from university here, during my time when I was seeking asylum, I was forced to stay home. I wasn't allowed to work. I stayed jobless for almost 8 months. I went through a daily struggle of trying to prove myself, trying to contribute to this new society that I'm being part of, but everything was not allowing me many limitation and challenges. Being a refugee come with a label tagged to it, stereotypes that already people have in their mind, their own perspective that they build through the watching media and what they show about refugees. They want you to see refugees as this economic burden that they just come here to take benefits and not contributing or they are similar to economic migrants who left their country just because they want to live in a better place. They don't really show the real struggle that we go through. It's not easy to leave your country, to leave your country and leave everyone behind you without knowing whether they're going to die at any minute or not. It's the media systematically changed, tried to influence the way that people here in the UK and in Europe see refugees. They dehumanized refugees in order to make us become numbers. That it's fine for us to die in the sea because we're nothing. We're not human. It's not easy here as well. It's not easy to prove yourself. It's a daily struggle. It's a daily struggle to change this perspective of refugees. It's not a legal status. It's everything. I cannot really contribute to the solutions for this or the global challenges, but I can suggest some of the thing that I think we should start doing is raising awareness about how refugees contribute to new the host community and how they are an investment to the economy rather than a burden. How they are, we should speak about more sustainable solution to the refugee crisis. It's not a crisis anymore. It's like, it's a fact. And people are not leaving just because they want to leave. It's just like we need to find solution to the crisis itself in order to end this influx. Also, we need to speak about integration. It's important to develop the integration system in this country in order to be inclusive, not only for refugees but for host community. They need to work together to build this new life. And that's it for me. It's like it's basic.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much for this very moving and revealing account. So I'm now going to ask Basha to tell us about his experience as a refugee.
Hello, I'm Bashar Farahat. I'm from Syria refugee.
So Basha, if you can speak up as much as you can. Sorry, we don't have the microphone.
This is one of our problems as refugees. Okay, so my journey is slightly different from Alaa. So my story starts in Syria. I studied medicine in Aleppo University. I graduated in 2009. I did 1 year in ER or A&D, and then I started training to become a pediatrician. And after 3 years, and that was in 2012, so the revolution took place in Syria, and I participated as a doctor and as a writer in the uprising against the Syrian regime, and I was consequently detained from the hospital that I was working in. And that took me like 6 months in the regime detention facilities, which are the worst place, I think, on earth to live in, and probably a lot of you heard about these the circumstances of detainees in Syria. Anyway, I was released after 6 months, and I found that I was not allowed to practice medicine anymore, and I was not allowed to leave the country because of my involvement in the revolution. And after 3 months, I was detained again, and the same process of torture and interrogations, and then I was released in 2013. And when I was released, I had nothing to do there. It was really risky to stay there. I could not get back to practicing medicine, and I couldn't put myself again in that experience. And that's always something that a lot of detainees mention in Syria, that they prefer to die or to have any fate rather than being detained again. And after all these like circumstances together, I had to leave Syria. I left Syria illegally to Lebanon. And in Lebanon, So it's always when the circumstances are really difficult, when it's a matter of death or life, you really enjoy being free, and you really feel the difference between being in Syria and being outside of Syria. And I always say, when it's a matter of life or death, it's like homesickness is a luxury. And so in Lebanon, the first few months were okay. I felt that I'm kind of relieved. It's a new opportunity to start my life there. But like millions of Syrians in Lebanon, it was really difficult. And I had to be registered with the UNHCR as a refugee in Lebanon, because refugees don't have legal status in Lebanon. So we have to do it through the UNHCR. And after a few months, they contacted me, and they said that if I was interested in resettlement, they would seek asylum for me somewhere. And in January 2015, I received a phone call from the UNHCR saying that, congratulations, you're going to the UK. And I said, what is the UK? And then to the United Kingdom, and it was really rare that someone from Lebanon to be accepted as a refugee in the UK. And I came to the UK in March 2015 to Bradford. So it was really smooth, simple, easy journey compared to like the really difficult journeys for Syrians who had to cross the sea. It was simple, easy. I was granted my status as humanitarian protection from the first day. I didn't really struggle with getting my documents and all these issues. And then after a few months here, I found that, so I was really shocked with the fact that it is, it's really difficult to improve your English here depending on the government assistance or so there is not really real support for refugees to work on their English. So I had to work on my own. I had to self-educate myself, and it took me like 2 years to be able to communicate with English. And after that, I started this dream of working as a doctor and getting back to my career, to my specialty. And then there was this complicated, painful process to transfer my certificates. I always start with the English exam, which is really challenging, and there is a lot to talk about it, how it sometimes doesn't make sense to ask doctors to really perfect in academic writing, or anyway, it's really long debate about the IELTS and how suitable it is for assessing your medical knowledge and your ability to work as a doctor. And then I found a job in London as a learning support assistant in a secondary school, which was really painful. And then I worked as a learning support assistant for 1 year, and then I started teaching science for secondary school students. And then I decided to stop because I found that it was quite late to start a career from zero, and I decided to go through the challenge and to try to finish these exams and be able to practice medicine here. And I'm still in the middle of the process. That's it.
Thank you very much, Basha. Thank you for sharing with us. I find incredibly generous of you to come here and tell us your stories. A very difficult, sometimes very painful story, and it's thank you for this generosity, because it's so important to listen to the stories you tell. Now we are going to move and ask Seema to tell us her story. Please, Seema. And are you going to speak English or no? So Seema is going to speak
Arabic,
and she's going to be translated by Mohammed. Yes?
Yes.
Of course. Sorry. Please do come in then.
That's my wife, by the way.
not a random stranger.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
So,
thank you, Seema.
Please, Seema.
Hello, everybody. I am Seema Nassar. I'm from Syria, and Syria, it's الشيء اللي راح أحكي عنه بأول دقيقتين من مداخلتي. And sorry, because my language is so bad. بدي أحكي عن سوريا أول دقيقتين لأنه بشوف إنه كتير شيء مهم إني أحكي عن بلدي بهي الفترة، لأنه هلأ بعد 8 سنين 9 سنين ما عاد اتفاجأ انه كمان في كتير ناس ما بتعرف شو عم بيصير بسوريا، واذا بتعرف فبتعرف كتير شيء عمومي. في حرب بسوريا، وان باحسن الاحوال في ثورة تم قمعها بسوريا.
I want to talk about Syria for the first 2 minutes of my intervention. I think it's very important to talk about Syria because after 8 or 9 years of the situation in Syria, I find, to my surprise, that a lot of people don't really know very much about the situation there. And if they do know, then it's, you know, that they know that there was a revolt that was crushed, and little more.
بدي أشير بس لحادثة بسيطة لحطكم بس بالسياق. بشهر أيار 2013 زارت سيدة من الحائزين على جوائز نوبل للسلام سوريا، وطالبت بالإفراج عن 72 ناشط سلمي بوقتها. هيدون النشطاء كانت قائمة بال 72، كتير أخذنا وقت لحتى نحدد معايير ونتأكد من إنه هن فعلا نشطاء استخدموا اللاعنف كوسيلة للتغيير.
In 2013 I met if I'm not wrong, a Nobel Prize winner.
Yes.
حائز
على جائزة نوبل للسنة.
Somebody who won a Nobel Prize for peace, and that we were working together to identify non-violent activists and to make sure to ensure that they were in fact non-violent activists.
بوقت وزير العدل وعد إنه يتم إطلاق سراحهم. هيدون 72 شخص للأسف 17 منهم فقط هن بقيوا عايشين، والبقية 14 منهم تأكد وفاته، والبقية مفقودين وبعداد ما بنعرف شيء عن مصيرهم.
At that time, the Minister of Justice in Syria had promised to release these non-violent activists from detention. But unfortunately, sorry, if you can repeat, how many of them had died? 14 of how many? 14 out of 272 had actually died. Yeah. In detention, and they were, I mean, they were non-violent activists. They had nothing to do with violence. The rest were missing.
Yeah. هدول الأشخاص كانوا محافظين بأسوأ الحالات بأحلك الأوقات على فلسفة أخلاقية عالية تجاه سوريا، وكانوا مآمنين باستخدام اللاعنف كوسيلة. حكوا عن الإصلاحات السياسية والتغيير الاجتماعي بسوريا، وكانوا مؤمنين، مو بس حكوا بهذا الشيء، وهذا كان مصيرهم. هذول الأشخاص النعينة من 87,253 محتجز داخل السجون السورية، بيناتهم 4,917 سيدة، بينهم 330 طفلة بين هذول السيدات المحتجزات. هذه الجزئية الصغيرة اللي عم بحكي عنها هي جزء كتير صغير من الواقع بسوريا اللي هربوا منه معظم اللاجئين، الملايين اللاجئين اللي هربت من سوريا هربت بسبب هذا الشيء، واللي صدر ما يسمى هلأ بأزمة اللاجئين، واللي محتار العالم كيف بده يحلها.
So the people that we were looking to help you know, secure their release from prison, they had been fighting with, you know, the very high level of ethics for a more ethical society. They believed and they acted in every way in order to secure a more democratic and free Syria. And these people who died or went missing are just a very small number of the more than 78,000 people who have gone missing in Syria's jails. More than 4,000 of them women, and 300 more than 330 of them children. And you know, just to kind of be clear, the majority of Syrians who are fleeing the country as refugees are fleeing precisely this fate. This is what they are trying to run away from and find safety from.
والبلش وبعدين معركتهم الثانية، معركة اللجوء. أنا ما كنت ناشطة بالميدان، أنا بس كنت عم وثق هاي الانتهاكات، كنت عم وثق بيانات المعتقلين والمفقودين بسوريا، عم وثق العنف الجنسي داخل أماكن الاحتجاز ونقاط التفتيش. هذا كان شغلي بسوريا. طول السنين اللي مضيت كنت بعتقد إنه عملي كان كتير شيء مهم، وكتير كنت فخورة باللي عم بحققه أو إنه حاسة إنه في شيء مهم عم ساوي. لا وقت من سنة وشهرين وأربعة وعشرين يوم وقت اللي قررت إني أقدم لجوء.
Okay. After they were able to flee, that is when they began their second level of their battle, and that is when they began their new lives as refugees. Personally, I wasn't on the ground in Syria. I was during this time I was documenting the violations, including sexual abuse against detainees. I am very proud of all of the work that I was able to do, and I have continued to do it, even you know after I became an asylum seeker and subsequently a refugee myself over a year ago.
Yeah. وقت صرت فكر إنه ليش أخذت هذا الموقف, ليش كنت كتير إكستريم تجاه الجرائم اللي عم بتصير بسوريا. ليش ما كنت كول أكتر تجاه قتل الناس تحت التعذيب؟ كنت على الأقل ما انحرمت من البلد, ما انحرمت من الفوت عليا. وهون عم بحكي مو بس عن حالي, أنا بالنهاية زوجي طبيب بيطري كتير مسالم, ما خصه بالسياسة ولا بالشأن العام. كان كل همه أنه يربي بناتنا التنتين أحسن ترباية. كنت مسؤولة أني وهن طبعا ما كان خيارهم أني أنا أمشي بهذا الطريق, بس هن اضطروا يتحملوا عقبات خياري أنا. وبالإضافة للحرب والظلم اللي عم بيصير بسوريا, أكيد كان نشاطي له دور بأنه فعلا هن كمان انحربوا من العودة لسوريا.
I have often wondered, you know, why did I take such an extreme position? Why was I determined to work on these issues? Why did I not turn a blind eye and at least not be in a situation where I am deprived of ever seeing my country again? At least I would have had a normal life. I am not just a human rights activist. I am also a wife. I am married to a very easygoing, non-political, apolitical veterinarian. And it wasn't my husband's choice or our two daughters for us to be in this situation. On top of the war that is raging in Syria, it is for sure the choices that I made have made my daughters' lives more difficult.
فكان من واجبي إني أمن لهم مكان آمن غير اللي انحرموا منه. قرار اللجوء اتخذته لحالي وبشكل سري. يعني أنا كنت خجلانة إنه يقول إني أنا طالعة على بريطانيا لأخذ لجوء. أنا بالأساس كان عندي فيزا لبريطانيا, يعني ما كانت أول زيارة. أنا من 2014 بيجي على بريطانيا بحكم شغلي. بس كنت خجلانة أقول إني أنا خلاص رح أجي على بريطانيا وما أرجع. بنفس الخجل اللي كانت الموظفة هي عم تاخذ بيانات إقامتي عم توشوشني هيك وتقول لي ريفيوجي, يعني وكأنه شيء معيب أن يكون ريفيوجي. وأنا لهلأ حاسة أنه إيه هو يمكن شيء معيب أو ما قدراني استوعب الحالة أو أتأقلم معه بشكل مناسب.
It is for this reason that I found that it was my obligation to find a more secure place for my family to live. I took the decision to become a refugee all on my own, in secret. I kept it a secret partly because I was ashamed. I was embarrassed to say that I'm coming to the United Kingdom as a refugee. Perhaps it was the same embarrassment as the one felt by the social worker who was taking my my details, and then she looked at me and whispered, "Refugee," as though it were something to be ashamed of.
هي الحالة بتنقلك يعني لنقلة نوعية من إنك تكون حدا فاعل وناشط وحدا بيعتمد عليه لحدا اتكالي بشكل كتير كبير, خاصة إنه ما في لغة بتساعدك حتى على مستوى الطريق. أي شيء مساعدة قانونية فأنت شخص اتكالي بشكل كتير كبير, فهذه يعني كتير مزعجة مؤلمة لحدا فاعل وناشط لحدا بيتقدم كخبير بمجال شغله. يعني أنا هون عم بعمل ريسيرش بالLSE عن توثيق الانتهاكات بسوريا وأثر على مسار العدالة الانتقالية بينما باللغة العربية طبعا بالوضع الطبيعي برا الوظيفة اللي بتنعرض علي هي تنظيف بالبيوت مع احترامي لكل اللي بيعملوها لهي الشغلة. بس هي المقاربات يعني بصراحة ما بقدر أتخيل يعني قد تبعاتها علي عم تكون.
This situation is particularly difficult for someone who considers themselves to be an active person who is in charge of their fate, someone who has always been very active. I am now someone who has to be taken care of, particularly because of the language barrier. This is also very difficult because I am someone who is considered to be an expert in their field. I am working as a researcher here at LSE on research on the situation of detainees in Syria. Of course, I work in the Arabic language. But outside, you know, in the outside world, when I'm looking for work, I'm offered work as a cleaner. And with all due respect, you know, to people who work as cleaners, but this is very difficult for me.
Just 1 minute, because we have already one more speaker, and then we want to have some questions. Okay.
أسوأ شيء صار معي هون هو إنه ما في عدالة بالفرص للاجئين نفسهم، وكسورية حسيت بتمييز سلبي تجاه السوريين. يعني كسورية ما بحق لك تتذمر أو تعترض على شيء، يعني كونه في ببلدك حرب وقصف وأنت بأمان، فإنه يعني لازم تحمد ربك، هذه ما لازم تتذمر أبدا.
The worst thing for me here has been experiencing a lack of justice in opportunities for refugees, especially for Syrians. I find that you know, the way that I am seen is that, well, as I'm Syrian and as there is bombing and war in my country, I have to take whatever I'm given.
عن تعاطف المجتمع البريطاني بس كنت حابة أعلق تعليق صغير، أنه أنا ما شفت مجتمع بريطاني، لأنه كان مفروض علينا أنه دائما نكون بمجتمع اللاجئين بكل محل كنا نروح عليه. هو بس مخصص للاجئين، سواء كانت الكنيسة، سواء كانت الجيم، سواء كان أي مكان، حتى ما كنا نشوف بريطانيين أو حتى ناس تانيين، فقط كنا نشوف اللاجئين، سواء كنا بالهوستل وبعد ما طلعنا من الهوستل وبكل المراحل اللي مريت فيها حتى أخذت الإقامة، وأنا ما عم شوف إلا اللاجئين، وبالتالي ما كان في ما كان في ردات فعل إلا اللي حكيت عنها قبل.
And as for the question of whether I have found solidarity among people in British society, I unfortunately haven't really had much contact with British society during the process of seeking asylum. While I was living in the hostel that was assigned to me by the authorities, I only saw other asylum seekers, whether it was when I was when I went to church, or whether it was when I went to the gym. Or even at the hostel itself, everybody around me was an asylum seeker, so I had very little opportunity to get a taste for, you know, what people in Britain felt. And that's
yeah. Thank you very much. I'm sorry, we have to move on, and there will be a chance when we have questions to continue. Please, Mohammed.
Thank you. My name is Mohammed Ghannam. I am a Palestinian, was born in Damascus. I lived and grew up and studied there. During that, I got a chance to work at the UNHCR in Damascus, because we have I remember at the time when I was working there at the UN Refugee Agency, we have 1.5 million Iraqis in 2007 coming to Syria, fleeing Iraq because of the war there that started in 2003. I remember something that whenever I see the Iraqi asylum seekers who fled their country coming to our offices at the UNHCR to register, to ask for protection, ask for aid, I remember my feeling about it. as someone, he's like almost a citizen in Syria, feeling comfortable, has a good job and everything. I remember I used to really feel pity for them. And in the same way, in the same time, I never felt that I will have a refugee as a friend, or it's, it could happen to me, or it could happen to one of my friends. I felt like, okay, it's happened somewhere far. Even Syria and Iraq are really close, but I never been to Iraq at that time in my life. So I felt like it's something far. They have a war, you know, so God help them. So I never thought that in some point I'm going to be one of them and to feel like they feel. So after I become a refugee, because now I'm a refugee in France, I arrived in France in 2015 after I was practicing journalism in Syria, working with the Associated Press and Washington Post in 2011 and 2012. So I got detained for a year and a half for that, for just practicing, taking pictures and writing some little articles, to be honest. That's 1 year and a half, including detention, interrogation, and torture, and even sexual abuse. I have to flee because of that, because after they release me from prison, they ask me to stay in the country to wait for trial in the terrorism court, because they accuse me of terrorism for dealing with unauthorized journalism, something like that, something funny. So I just had to flee, you know, to Lebanon. And even in Lebanon, there is no also safety net for